Hello and thanks once again for taking the time to download and listen to our podcast from CelticUnderground.net. I'm Harry Brady and this week we have a very, very special guest on the Celtic Underground podcast. Myself, By the Men Celtic and Celtic Crit News were fortunate enough to be invited along to meet with Celtic assistant Chris Davis at Lennox Town this week, and he was very generous with his time, gave us 50 minutes to sit down and chat everything about Celtic. It's most enlightening and I'm sure you will find it as fascinating a listen as I did. As the timing went for the day, we were very, very fortunate that as we finished chatting with Chris Davis, the pre-Inverness Cali Thistle interview with Brendan Rodgers was about to start in the press room, so we were accorded the luxury of being able to go in there, stick some audio recording equipment down and listen to Brendan. Although it's about the Inverness Cali game, actually, it's as much to do with the chat on Billy McNeil, John Clark and the Lisbon Lions. It's a really fascinating 10 minutes if you've not heard it already. One thing that I thought was very interesting was Brendan's chat about being part of a big club and appreciating the history but not letting the history smother the ambition of the club. I did feel as though he was maybe touching on a famous team down south that we are red that he might have an insight into. Anyway, enough of me. This is me, Harry Brady, accompanied by the Men Celtic and Celtic Quick News, with him, Mr. Chris Davis.
Can you just take us through, you know, how it's gone generally, domestically? Yeah. We'll take as read, but if you can comment on that in Europe and really maybe just comment on the day after that initial one. Where were you at that point?
I think after that one we were pretty calm still, because it was a bad result. We knew that, but we'd seen enough in that game and analysing them a little bit and what we'd had on them, that, and we knew enough about Celtic Park that it would be different. You know, we could completely kill them really when we got them back there, because the big factor was the pitch, and in a way that gave you confidence for the second legs. It was so dry, the pitch was a really bad Astro, it's not like a new one that, you know, you can, like, we've got one out there that in the train, we trained on it today, and it was built last year, and it's a bit of water on it, does help, but it's fine. Yeah. But that was a really sticky Astro. So, and the goal came from that long ball and a bounce, and so that was one way of getting confidence it's going to be all right after that. We were getting to know the players, so straight away after that game, under a pressure environment, we knew straight away a little bit more about the players. So again, we'd be better for that, because then the team we're picking now for the home leg is different. Need that pressure game. So that was that, really. I mean, that was kind of how we were feeling after that, and we'd had a really busy pre-season schedule leading up to that point. So we've been in Slovenia and things going on, so it's pretty hectic, and new to the qualification process as well for the Champions League, so it was all fresh. But when we came back, we were confident that on a bigger, slicker pitch with home support, and knowing then that how they were going to play exactly, a few little tweaks what we could do, but we were pretty calm that we'd go back and do it. So, and then from that, yeah, I mean, the qualification was pretty intense, to be honest. And, you know, it's going to be the same every year. That's what it is. So soon going into it. We'll be better next year because we know everything better and we can prepare better. It was only the end of May that we're coming in here. And then, you know, you've got that game sort of 6 weeks later, I think. So it's short preparation time. But now we'll be much better for it, because it is something you need to plan for in terms of them games. So we managed to navigate our way through the Astana game pretty well, pretty professionally. Certainly the away one was good. Bring them back, and we got obviously late goal, but and then obviously the Hapoel was a great start, and we made a few mistakes to give them a lifeline, really. And then it opened up for the second leg. And then, but again, we had the plan for that game, and it was a very difficult one in terms of obviously the atmosphere, but also psychologically, you know, you're up in the game and you know what they've got to do, you know what you've got to do. So it's a different mindset for a football match, you know, than what you're used to on foreign soil as well. But we did the job there, managed to see that out. And that was getting us qualified. And then everything domestically has been very good. I mean, initially coming in, we knew that we would have dominating a lot of the ball. One of the things that we've been pleased with the response and the reaction from, not just at Celtic, but kind of more widespread, is the pressing element of what we do, because that can... It's a massive part of playing and dominating is the ability to recover the ball quickly. Otherwise, you leave yourself vulnerable. It also, pressing kind of keeps you higher up the field as well. Again, leads to more chances. So we identified that was a tactical area that we could put into the domestic game that would help us a lot. Win the ball back quicker, pressing more aggressively, and basically staying in more compact in the opposition's half. In Champions League, that has to be tweaked, because obviously you're leaving a lot of space in your back, and you know, quicker players can exploit that. So we kind of manage that in different ways depending on the opponent, but still it's the same idea. Against Man City, for example, we were high pressing as much as we could. So domestically we've been really good. I mean, leading right through to where we're at now. And I think, reflecting on the weekend's game, is, for me, I feel like it's when you're a big team, or when you go into a big team now for the other teams, it's your game plan is kind of linked to how the form of the big team. And I think you've got one, they come and play, which happens when the big team's out of form or, you know, a bit vulnerable. We see that a lot. They just play football. Then you've got the option of defending half pitch, try and counter attack, and that's quite common, I think. But then you get this new version, or not new version, it happens over the years many times, but it's the super defensive. It's one third of a pitch, 10 players and a goalkeeper, and just keeping the score down, with all due respect. And the chances of you scoring as the smaller team in that example is very, very small, but it's frustrating now for the bigger team. So we're in that phase, I think, at the moment, and we've earned that right, if you like. But then it becomes, you have to find the solutions to get through that. And 5-4-1, if you think what we did there in Hapoel Beersheba, in the last 15 minutes, we went to like 5 diamond 1, blocked it up just to try and calm that, and we did really well. That's what Hamilton played on the weekend defensively, just to stop goals going in. It's a good system. So so that's kind of where that's at now. We've done really well domestically, and then that's kind of where we're at the moment.
Great. In terms of you talked about the programme, Chris, with obviously this is very different to what you've been used to with previous clubs you've been at, in terms of the qualification period. Yeah. How much a challenge is that? Obviously you've got to base everything around that, don't you? Your preparation, the recruitment, the breaks for the players. How are you feeling, obviously, coming? You came in late, as you said, end of May last year. You're obviously probably in preparation mode now, I would think. Again, not taking anything for granted title-wise, but it looks like we're going to get there. So how has that changed things?
Yeah, it does. It's because almost, you know, really key games are coming so early in the season. So the physical conditioning aspect is massive. Of how fit the players are, basically. How can you get them? Because they're playing 60 games, so they need to recover. We're fighting all the way up till now, hopefully the end of May, for trophies. So you're then needing a break and then coming back in. So you've got to manage that. But with planning, we can do that. Obviously, a couple involved in the European Championship, stuff like that as well. And that's not going to happen this year. But there are some international games, so we can kind of plan rest for them. Suitable amounts of rest, so that coming into this qualification period we'd get them all training and playing and ready for it. The pre-season schedule that we have, obviously we've got time to kind of along with the club control exactly how that's going to look and make it a bit more suited to that process. And that's something through, obviously, being through the qualification, you know that, like, for example, with the option possibly, you know, going to America and stuff like that. Yeah. I think the manager's spoken about that, you know, time lag and jet lag can kind of possibly cost you in the qualification. So that can be, the logistical side of it can be sorted out. And yeah, I think we're massively, much more important than any of that, is where we are actually at as a team and our kind of development of the team. So we've got our, the players are here, okay, that, you know, you never know what's going to happen. Players come and go in football, you just can never quite tell. But we've got a great core here that we know we're going to be here next year, and we've got this way of playing with the ball, without the ball, and they've developed all the ideas that we will talk about, because every coach is slightly different, exactly what they want. But that's a year now working with the same messages every day, with the same, watching the games back, everything, the processes are all the same. So that helps a lot of how we're going to go and play in these games,
yeah.
Which we didn't have in Red Imps. That was a, you know, that was very new, you know. And then obviously even in teams like Astana, which are difficult games, we're going there, the team's developed and evolved to a point where we're going to be much better for it as well. So that's why we're confident, you know, that we get things right this time as well.
I had to take the dog out for a walk for the last 10 minutes, the half-wheel game.
I wish I could as well, actually.
No, I was going to say, how do you cope mentally on the sidelines? Because genuinely, I managed, this is the adrenaline in me.
Yeah.
I walked. It took me 25 minutes to walk back the distance that it had taken me 10 minutes to walk there.
Yeah.
Because I got text through to say the game was over. The stress was...
No, it was...
So how do you cope on the sidelines? Because you can't let the players know that you're suffering that stress.
No, I think... I mean, one way, I think, again, led by Brendan, this is where I think Brendan is and has proven to be a you know, very elite manager, and I think his ability to deal with pressure is a massive part of it. He's not one that he's emotional and getting worked up a lot. He keeps calm, and you can see that the way he talks to the players, the way he talks to us as staff. And so he... That's the first one. A kind of figurehead is someone who can deal with pressure. So you're kind of all feeding from that. I just think what helps in them moments and what we managed to do at that time was kind of, you know, think about the actual processes of what's happening on the field. Because at that point, you can't actually, by shouting onto the pitch, do really anything. It's just happening. It's happening. They're on the ride and it's going on. But you can make... interventions tactically, I think, that can make small differences in the way the team's sort of set up and stuff like that. So that's kind of what we focused on that second half, because we did make a change, and actually that change was crucial. If you look back on the game, the minute Eric Sviatchenko comes into the game, it pacified completely Hapoel, and it just took the air out of them. And that was a tactical thing. You don't get them all perfectly right, but that was a big one, because that then allowed us to be a lot more solid defensively and kind of block up the spaces that were being attacked, and just look in control. But yeah, it's a stressful one, and to be honest, we've discussed it since, and we kind of, you know, sometimes we sort of joke about how intense that was, but I think we also know that you kind of have to accept that it's going to be like that, because we'd gone over there with 5-2 lead, which, you know, was actually a fantastic lead to be taken there in many ways, but you still have to endure that, and obviously Craig saves the penalty as well, so, and there was different things. So I think we are expecting that them pressure moments do come, and you have to see them out in the big qualification games. That's I don't think that's going to change. So, but like I said, that's something the manager talks about a lot, and I feel possibly from the outside looking in, maybe it's something that Brendan has improved in the group as well, you know, in terms of dealing with pressure. It's something he doesn't hide from. It's something that he, you know, we also had experiences at Liverpool where players were under a lot of pressure as well. So we've got the experience of how they need to be preparing mentally for the games as well, because you can't kind of pretend it's not there, if you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And just say, you know, because you want to keep perspective and kind of, you know, we're all still alive, and, you know, you keep perspective that there's more worse things happening in the world, and that is important. But in their moments, they're feeling an immense amount of pressure. So it's kind of like ways in which and techniques that help them deal with that, and the manager's good at that. So that's kind of that.
And in terms of techniques, just sorry, one follow up to that. Are you and Brendan big fans of the likes of have you read up on like Carol Dweck and people like that? Because it does seem to be that you talk about people who want to develop mentally and emotionally. So is that a big side of
the fix and the growth
mindset?
Yeah. I think so. I think, to be honest, I've not actually read that, but I'm aware of the concept, and I think it's kind of probably a natural way that comes out in certainly the way the manager works, and probably it's rubbed off on me, is that people with that growth mindset, and that's something that we kind of expect as a minimum, really, and it definitely helps if you've got that. But yeah, I mean, obviously the manager's studied NLP. I think he's spoken about that before. And he's always been good at dealing with, communicating with players. I remember obviously when I played for him, it was the same. Always found him the best coach I'd ever had at communicating, basically. So we've obviously we worked with Steve Peters at Liverpool, who wrote The Chimp Paradox, and Steve's obviously a real specialist in his field. That was a good book as well, and some good stuff in that. And there's loads of different resources that you can use, but I'm aware of that. I think that's a good one, the growth mindset.
Yeah.
Coming in a year ago, improving Celtic was pretty straightforward because the club was in many respects on a bit of a downer. Different question now. You're actually having to recruit players who can compete and break into a Champions League squad. And we know that's not going to be easy. In Scotland, we know that there are specific challenges here in Scotland. So, what type of footballer is it that's going to A, meet your criteria, and be up for that specific challenge?
I think it depends. The profile obviously is related to each position, quite what we want in each position. But
can I give you some for instances here? Over the last 20 years, we've got managers come in who say, look, I want the young guy who's hungry, and I want the mature guy at 33, 34 just to come in and steal up a wee bit here. Now, we had that a wee bit with Toure, who came in and contributed really importantly in a big position for us, an important part of the season. In your forward planning, will we see that again, or are we going to see, look, this Moussa thing is just open their eyes, we want to go and we want to hit that strategy strongly?
I think, to be honest, I think the balance is key to it, because I think you always need good senior pros. Every dressing room, every club needs that. It's absolutely vital. Your senior players, you've got senior colos come in. We've also got likes of Brownie and Lustig and Craig Gordon, senior players that are really respected and stuff. So that will never ever change. That you need that in a dressing room, but at the same time, what also will never change is that young, enthusiastic, hungry players that want to prove themselves and are kind of on this upward curve in their career. That mentality is also valuable. So I think certainly where we're at, where we've been at this season, in terms of having that balance, I think that is the way to go. I think if you push it too far one way, then you just go for young, hungry, and you maybe lose out when you need it from that experienced head, and vice versa. If you just go for experience and kind of try and be safe just for 29 year olds and 30 year olds that kind of have been around the block, then you're losing a little bit of that energy and kind of enthusiasm that you also need. So the balance between the two.
Again, not wanting to put you on the spot about what's went before at Celtic, Chris, but one of the stark things for the likes ourselves supporters this year is seeing the improvement in some of the players from I guess how they were performing in previous years and previous seasons, and also not just about improvement, but just I guess just how the team's kind of gelled in that respect as well. So without asking about individuals, what type of things, how do you take a player that's maybe been short in confidence, that's got the ability obviously but hasn't really fulfilled it, and you sort of transform them into the way that some of our players are playing this season?
I think probably to start with, we try and get them to value the collective and not that they didn't before, but that's kind of how we would do it, you know, in terms of the first thing is kind of forget yourself, think about the team, the collective. So now the collective principles we talk about, the pressing, no ego, press the ball, press together, one brain, you know, 11 players, one brain, all that collective side of it, and it kind of taking, just focusing on them, team processes. And then with that team organisation, if it's well organised and it's aggressive with and without the ball, then you start to get more success individually, and then confidence starts to grow. Because it's confidence. It's that's, you know, we all know that anyone that's ever played football doesn't need to be professionally. When you're feeling confident, you know, it's different. It's different to play when you're not confident. So confidence will always be the most important thing for an individual player to feel good, and that comes from successes, but there can be small wins in terms of the team's doing well and they're fulfilling a function for the team and getting praise and recognition for that work that they're doing, maybe without the ball. And it could be an attacking player, how they're pressing the game, it gives them confidence, and you know, then it builds from there. Certainly on the side of their own development and how they're playing differently to when they maybe haven't been playing so well, we will always try and actually analyse and feedback. And that's a big one as well, I think. Sometimes you get senior players, I'm not saying it's happened here before, but they get to a point and they become a pro and maybe an established pro, and then no one actually talks to them.
Yeah.
You just kind of step back and kind of lay there in their own little world, and then maybe got feedback from friends or parents or different people. But the kind of cycle we go through is try and analyse every game and then actually feedback not only to the team but to individuals, and watch back every action they have in the match, and try and give them that. And the manager will speak to players a lot. I'll do the same. Did it at Liverpool with individual players, pulling them in, and found that even the most, you know, some world class players were very receptive to just that feedback and the development of their own game, no matter what age they are. So I think that environment has helped as well, and that's where you see kind of players maybe in a better moment than they were previously. That kind of feedback, I think, is really, really crucial.
Good.
See that point there you just made about a guy gets to 24, 25, he's then an established player and he's just left,
yeah,
and he plays for the next 10 years,
yeah,
at that level.
Yeah.
Yourself, you're credited, and obviously you just talked about the Hapoel game and making tactical changes.
Mm.
You're credited as being a person who's quite thoughtful on tactics.
Mm.
Do you think you benefited from not being, obviously your career ended early as a player, do you think you benefited,
yeah,
from not being in a club and playing the same way, and so you turned up as a manager?
Oh, definitely, yeah. I mean, I kind of, a lot of players that have been big players will actually say, blimey, when they start doing the coaching badges and thinking coaching wise, they'll say, I wish I knew now as a coach kind of what I didn't know when I was a player, and it would help me so much as a player. That, I think that's a rule that I think a lot of players will accept as they get older, and if they do go into coaching and start thinking about the game more deeply maybe, and it would have helped them so much more. Certainly for me, I came out so young and was able to learn that way. Another massive thing for me was my sort of journey was the specific role that I had as well, because when I was working with Brendan, and I came back to work with him after having initially played with him, I was obviously doing my coaching badges. I'd be out on the grass and helping, but a big function for me was looking at the opponent and looking at kind of how our way of playing, basically a game plan, and obviously Brendan in charge of that process, but I'm just assisting. And for that period going through to, from the Championship to the Champions League, I was studying a lot of football, and kind of for me it was different to being, I'd been youth coaching for 6 years, and that was great in terms of like learning, communicating with the players and different little drills, but for that 5-6 year period where I was just purely studying the tactical side of the game, that gave me a huge amount of confidence when it came to looking at a game of football and understanding exactly what's happening and what tactical interventions can be made, attacking, defensively. And that was a kind of foundation for me that now, and another big thing is the fact that understanding what the manager wants exactly, you know. And I think that's a big part of it, because you can fit your own ideas around football around a kind of a game model and a structure. I know exactly what Brendan will want from his team, his players, and therefore I'm able to look at the opponent, look at us, and kind of take a look at the bigger picture of how then they can come together. I think if you just have that awareness of football but you don't quite understand the manager's game model and what exactly he's looking for, then you can start to get disconnected somewhere along the line, and then it becomes mixed messages, and then it's all a bit. So that's a big one, you know, kind of my relationship with Brendan and my understanding of his football mind. Mm-hmm. And to be honest, my beliefs, my football beliefs, have been you know, cultivated by Brendan, but to the point where I completely believe in them as well. And that's something which I think is important for manager-assistant relationships, is that I completely believe in what Brendan believes, and follow him like he's the leader. And you don't get that everywhere. Not every assistant really believes what the manager, and that's what he's got in me, is someone that completely, because, and he's, I learned an awful lot from what I know from Brendan, because he's fantastic. I think he's the most, you know, the modern era, of course, British managers, he's the best there is at the moment. So that's but that is a massive interest of mine. I absolutely love tactics and, you know, that side of the game.
I asked someone who knows you, well, if I could ask you a question to catch you in,
yeah,
on tactics.
Yeah.
I'm still waiting for that text to come through.
Oh, really?
Yes.
No, I'd
he just asked me to talk about breaking the horizontal lines and compactness and those sorts of phrases with you.
All that type of stuff. I absolutely love it. Absolutely love the tactical side, and, you know, it is so important, and it actually is something which, you know, is definitely undervalued in certainly English football and maybe Scottish football as well, and maybe in other countries there's more of an appreciation of the tactical side of the game. I do still feel that, because you couldn't get a more feeling for football than you're going to get in Scotland. It's just like, you know, passion and the feeling for the game is unrivaled. You know, that tactical side of the game, thinking the game through, I think sometimes players that come in from different countries with more of an emphasis on that, Italian or Spanish or Dutch, not all of them, but there may be, and that's to do with the coach education, player development, you know, that kind of thing, appreciation for the tactical side of the game, because basically all tactics is decision making. So the execution is the technique, but tactics is just a decision that you make. That's, for a player, that's all that tactics is.
Because that's what I was thinking, as you're talking there, you can be as passionate and as detailed as you want in the tactics.
Yeah.
But the players also then surely have to be more tactically aware on the part, because you can't call a timeout and pull people off.
No, exactly. And it's all about the players. I mean, you can know as much as you want. It has to be tailored to suit. And everyone's different. You get, you know, I've had it every club we've been at. Certain players can take more information than others. So you tailor it to suit each one. But it's trying to make it simple for them as well. Because it is a simple game, and you know, can be overcomplicated. But I think the way you can go, the way I would look at it, and I think what we do is we kind of go into the layer after layer after layer of detail behind the scenes. But when we lay it out to the players and we do a session with them or set the game plan up, it's in the most simplest way that suits them. But I think some coaches will go through the layer and layer and layer and layer of detail, and they'll try and go through the layer and layer of detail with the players, which then it becomes too much. So we just try and get everything, but then how can we just deliver that in a concise, clear way that there's people know what they're doing, we're well organised, but it's not too much.
Has there been a moment this season, you know, where that felt like it was just starting to come together? Is there anything you think of, a result or just a moment in a game where you've just looked at it and thought, yep, that's it, that's what I was looking for?
Well, the game that I like, that in terms of course, the game against Rangers was a statement game.
Yeah.
It was a statement, we are here, basically. And we blew them away. And that was kind of like showing a power in terms of counter-attack, ball possession, aggressive pressing, everything. So
I'll quite like you to do that again next week if possible.
Well, just a really important point. See, if we get to five, you have to go for 7 and 8.
Yeah,
I'm not kidding. 7-1 is our best victory against the old Rangers,
right?
So there you go. That's the reason.
Good to know that. Good to know.
October 1957.
Not that it matters much. That game, the Mönchengladbach away game, was an important one for our development as a team, because the manager had spoke to the players and made a big thing of leading up to that game about the importance of personality. Mm-hmm. We'd obviously had the game against Barca, it was difficult first game and stuff like that, and then obviously the game at home against Mönchengladbach. But the Mönchengladbach away game, there was a real maturity there. We should have ended up winning the game. We just looked like we had the personality, exactly what the manager was trying to talk to the players about. It was coming through in that game, and we looked really at the level. And again, we'd gone away to a difficult place, then we should have won that game. Speed of our play, quality, positional play, compactness defensively, everything was there.
Yeah.
Good Champions League performance. City then go away to City, and I felt we've kind of continued that and kind of towards the end of that run. But that was certainly that Borussia Mönchengladbach away game, while it didn't actually end up meaning much, it was important, I felt.
Yeah.
But certainly clicking together, I felt, when we come out of that Rangers game, we'd been on the run. I thought, to be honest, the Hearts game, I was really happy after that, because Scott had come up and scored, and know all about Scott. One of the first, but immediately when we came up here, we knew we wanted Scott here. And Scott scoring, coming off the bench and scoring that goal, I was happy, because I know what he can do, and obviously we've got a massive amount of faith in him. And just seeing his pace, because that's something which we know we can exploit with teams up here. His pace, his directness, his want to score a goal.
Yeah.
It was like, yeah, this is going to be good. So that was kind of, I remember that one.
Going back to development of tactics, I'm delighted to hear everything you said there. It's been a big hobby horse of mine. We get schooled here as Celtic supporters every few years. You know, we learn something, it works, and then from nowhere something comes out of the blue and kind of takes the legs away from us. And that tends to happen because of what you talked about earlier. We're up against the 10 defenders and a goalkeeper, and it's hard to innovate.
Yeah.
And you will win the vast majority of things, and every now and again there'll be a domestic challenge that causes you a few questions, but you will never get a real challenge there. So how do you go from where you are right now to developing your tactical abilities for the challenge that you're going to only face a handful of times a season?
I think one of the big ways is training, because some of the real tactical problems that you get can be in training, because we kind of put a lot of emphasis on that, and certainly in the form of, just away from tactics for a moment, the importance of training, the mentality to want to work, beat your best every single day. That's a big, big thing for us. Every training session is important. It's not just waiting for the next game. They are an opportunity to get yourself in the team and stuff like that. But in them training sessions, every one, we always have tactical emphasis on that, whether it is, you know, attacking wise, looking at how we can penetrate more the opponent's defensive line, how we can get on the back of their midfield and play in that zone between the lines, how we can switch the play. There's always an emphasis and always a focus, same defensively. And we set up practices in games, and sometimes, especially when it's 10v10, they're real good games. And you're posing questions from other quality players against quality players, and you can see that they're stimulating them and developing them. We also video every training session, so then we can go back and say, you know, that game we did the other day, when we're talking about this is how you could have done it.
Yep.
And we'll come up against this in Champions League, so be aware of this. Mm-hmm. And so we use that as a way of developing it. And of course, domestically, there's a lot of common things that will come up, that kind of general things that will, but in terms of like maybe stuff we're more likely to face, we will definitely do that, and we'll use training for that. We've got a big squad, especially when we've got a week between games, we often have 20 players training, so that you can play 10v10, and you can do a lot of that then. So that's probably how to say we'd address that.
I guess in terms of the ethos that the first team's following and the players that are coming in that first team squad, Chris, how important is it to get that throughout the club in terms of the academy players coming through and coaching staff? And obviously, you know, Brendan spoke quite positively when he first arrived about what he found. How's that relationship working in terms of, you know, really permeating through the club?
I think it's going really well. I mean, Brendan, obviously coming from that development pathway himself, is passionate about that as well, which is great for academies when he works at clubs, because he kind of engages with them. Yeah. Not every manager does. But they tried to follow a little bit of our shape earlier in the season and put practices in place that related to how we were trying to animate into our offensive shape and wingers coming in and stuff like that. They tried to try and replicate that a little bit and kind of build off what we're doing with the first team. And they're basically following that, and I think that kind of tactical way as well, and trying to, like, for example, the first phase building up from the goalkeeper, the options that the goalkeeper's got in the build-up phase, is something that I know that they've put in developing even more. And Brennan's obviously actually sat and done a presentation and spoke to them and stuff about that. And there's loads of talented coaches in the academy. See the sessions that they put on, and there's obviously, like I say, there's so many kids coming out of a club like Celtic that have just got this great enthusiasm for the game. So we're with the right coaching method, then, you know, it's going to be exciting for the academy. So I know they were doing great work before, and I think they're kind of enjoying just taking some bits off that we're doing with the first team.
I know you've talked about it before, about hard work. Do you want to take people through who are listening to this? What time do you get in here in the morning? Do you want to take them through your day?
Yeah, I usually get in about seven, maybe half six, seven. But it's always just before the kids get up, so I don't have to, you know, just wait for them, just sneak out the back door.
That's the middle of the night for me. Just
usually get in. You have to be careful of the roads, because it's there's not much lamppost on that road out from Bears Den, so you're like, you have to go the Torrance way to make sure you stay safe. But yeah, come in, and then it's preparing before training. We prepare, you know, before training, for the session. Then we have a training meeting. We always do that. And it's just, there's never enough you can do, I always find, whether it's two games in a week, three games in a week, there's just always something more to do, whether you can analyse the game you've just played, which we always do, but analyse the opponent. And if there's more time, spend some time doing some individual work with players. And this is all away from the grass. Then you go out there and you can put it into practice. You can look at recruitment, players you want to get in, and look at some games there. You can look at other teams in Champions League, how they're playing, little ideas and stuff like that. And then we'll always have meetings in the afternoon, whether that's to review the opponent, review our next game, review our own performance, a recruitment meeting. So we kind of schedule one of them in throughout the day. And then my own kind of process is I go home, do with the kids in the bath, and then I got an office, which my wife hates, but I love. I go in there all night and then start thinking about the next day. So
it's about 7 hours of sleep and 3 hours playing with the kids.
That's
non-Celtic.
Yeah, quick cup of coffee with the wife, and then that's it. Straight back on again. But it's great, you know. I love it. I know Brennan's the same. He watches, you know. It's a whole life of it. It's not just, you know, come in and do a session and go back. It's just, I just think there's never enough hours in the day. You can always do something more that can help them little one percenters that can just make, maybe they can make the difference for the next game or a few games down the line. And kind of that that preparation work, I think, is massive. It gives you confidence. I think you're prepared well, not only for the session that you're doing, it gives you confidence when you're delivering it, but it gives the players confidence going into the game. If you know the opponent really well, it gives you confidence on the sideline when you're on the bench. If you know the game plan really well, it gives you confidence. Everything. It's preparation and all them hours that go in behind what people see. That I think is... you can control that. That's one of the controllables. You can do the work. So I think he's good to make use of that.
I'm good.
Yeah.
I think another thing I was going to ask is, in terms of the standard of Scottish football, the standard of what you found, Chris, in opposition terms, you've obviously come from, you know, down south and some really good technical players and technical teams down there. Mm. How, you know, Scotland obviously isn't comparing that, but is it as bad, or is it, you know, how did you find it compared to what you thought you would find?
I think it's, to me it was pretty as I thought. It's what I thought, but I can tell you what I think of it as well. And it's I think the you have got good technical players. I think there is good technical players up here. I think the speed of the game is probably the main difference. I think I noticed that when we went from the Championship. I think every level you go up, the speed increases, but certainly Championship to Premier League, the speed of the transitions they talk about, the turnover of the ball, how quick it can go from, you know, simple situation to a goal chance because of the speed of players exploiting the space. And that was that's the Premier League, and that's why. And then you look at the top level of the game now, so much is the ability to control counter-attacks, because the pace, the pitches, the ball, everything's getting quicker and lighter and speedier. So being able to control that defensive transition, and I mean, Scotland obviously has players that are technically good. I mean, has, which one thing I love is just the honesty, the mentality. The players, you see them, they just fight and they never stop, and that is something which you can, tactics are important and everything like that, but that is the most important thing in football, is the mentality and the attitude and the application of, that will never ever change. You've got that in abundance up here, which I think is a fantastic thing. The way the teams are playing is similar to a lot of, it's a British style league. There's no different to a lot of teams in the Premier League still playing that way. A little bit of direct play, trying to get the ball forward in crosses, can be difficult to defend against. You know, physical. I'd say that's probably the norm. Certainly, like the Championship in England is that. And when we're in there with Swansea, you have to deal with that. We were one of the few teams at that time that was playing more, having more of the ball, and kind of that was Swansea's way. And certainly when we got promoted, we were doing that. So we're kind of used to that as well, of dealing with the demands of the league in terms of that physical direct play, crosses. And there's one thing to make clear is that there's absolutely no right or wrong way to play, and that's one thing that we're kind of big on as well. We've got a completely, manager's got what he believes in the game. I completely believe what he believes, but we also think there's no right or wrong way. It's, everyone can choose, and everyone's got different resources of, and there's different ways to get results. At Swansea, we had success that way. We were able to control that physical side of the crosses and the direct play, but then we were able to play the way we wanted to with the ball, and have success like that. So yeah, that's what I'd probably say what the Scottish League is, you know. But I think that probably you always know that you're never going to go into a game and the team are going to not turn up, type of thing, or, you know, that they're a team that's kind of going to give up or something like that. They'll just keep going up here, and I think that is something that is commendable, to be honest.
So can that, as a general rule for Scottish football, what do you think Scottish football needs to do to be producing players who are playing at the pace, technically at the pace, ignoring Celtic, just in general?
I think the profile of player genetically, is he quick or not, is kind of one thing. Is but those quick players that are in academies and stuff like that, I don't know. I mean, I think, I don't know exactly what is happening in terms of developing players in Scotland and what they're laying out there. I think there's good conditions to develop players in terms of you just couldn't get a country that loves football as you know, the same. It's up there, and I think it's, do they understand? I know from my own views as a player when I was developing is that is that tactical understanding, is understanding the game, you know. why you're making these things and kind of the method of the game when your team's got the ball, understanding where you're moving, why you're moving there, why does the goalkeeper play short or why does he kick it long, what would the reasons for that be, as a team, why would we press high, why wouldn't we, you know, if you're pressing high, do you understand exactly how you do it? And I think that just that general understanding and of the game, tactics in the game, and because isolated actions, 1v1 and just playing in the duels, mm-hmm. is pretty simplistic, and that's, and we all understand that, you know, he's your man, you're my man, I follow you, and we take you on and try and tackle you, tackle me, and but what is that, what does, if I move, if I run away and you follow me, do I know that I'm creating space for someone else to run into, and can I think about that more, you know, that I'm in the duel here, but if I am being man marked, I move, create space, or move you away to run back into it, and then just kind of how it all links together. I think that, and that's to do with the kind of game understanding. I think, you know, Scotland was, I remember my dad has told me about Scottish teams in the past being technically amazing, mm-hmm. with the ball. You know, he told me about a time he'd come up to watch, I think it was Scotland play England, and he said England just came up to basically kick Scotland, and they had four centre halves across the back, and it was like, but Scotland were known for being a technical team, the team with the players that could deal with the ball, and I definitely see that with players I've come across in over the years that I've either played with, or, you know, Scottish technically good. So I think it's kind of celebrating that, enhancing that, and then getting that into the team structure.
This gets back to one of Shankly's great axioms, that we believed in Scotland for a long, long time, that, you know, good footballers didn't have their brains in their head, had them in their feet.
Yeah.
And I don't know if maybe you need to be quite intelligent now to be a professional footballer in the modern game.
Yeah. Well, I think it's knowing what you need to do and how it fits into it. You know, like you've got an understanding of, you know, recently there's been the example of talking about Philip Lahm and how amazingly intelligent, how much information he can take on, and, you know, the players that aren't taking on as much information, they still understand the team tactics but in a more simple form. So I think depending on the position, like, you know, number six, central midfield player, controlling midfield player, I think you have the real big intelligence to play and be in there. If you can understand on the sides why you're making movements, how to make them, I think that's enough. So maybe it's position specific.
Wingers can be thick.
yeah that's the headline.
Is it wingers can be, wingers are?
No, it is, but these days, to be honest, you get wingers that playing always inside now, like number 10s, but I still think it's good penetration pace on the sides is good.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I was obviously aware for a bit of time about Billy's situation, and of course it's really sad that, you know, the family have felt to come out and have, but having to make it public, but as always, Billy and his family retain the huge support of the Celtic family, which is the supporters and everyone involved at the club. A true icon and a true leader of this club, and one of the great figures that has inspired the Celtic to what it is today. So I met Billy at the last time was at the Aberdeen game. And he was in good spirits, and, you know, the twinkle still in his eye. But of course, like his wife said, he finds it hard to communicate at the moment. But no, the club, the football club, everyone here, and the support that he has is will always be here for him, and to try to make their lives as easy as they possibly can.
You touched on it there, but can you sum up what he means to this club?
Yeah, I think that in my time growing up, he was the one figure that was always mentioned. I think if you look at him as obviously as the player, the guy that was the first. I think what he did was he inspired not just people around Celtic Football Club, but I'm sure many a player in Britain in particular. You know, being the first captain of a British team to pick up the European Cup. You know, I think many players around that time would have wanted to have done that. But you only truly get inspired when you see someone actually that maybe you know or are close to actually do it. And when Billy stood up in Lisbon and held up the cup at that moment, I'm sure for many players in Britain at that time, it gave them a great source of inspiration to go on and do that. And obviously then from that moment, Liverpool went on and won the European Cup five times, and other teams went on and won it, and other managers went on and won it. So a really truly inspirational figure. Celtic, what he was as a player, a real leader of men and proper men in at that time. And of course as a manager, you know, my time really was remembering him as a manager and the great teams that he managed growing up and the great players, and again stood amongst those and led those. So one of the truly iconic players and people of this club that was always and will always be remembered fondly in his time involved at Celtic, and I'm sure he'll be around for to see many more games, I'm sure.
Do you use Billy as an inspiration to your players? I think they'll be well aware of who he is and his leadership qualities. Is that something? Do you mention that, or do you not need to because they're so aware of who he is and what he stands for?
Yeah, I don't need to. I think that I think when I first came in here, I said about my duty as a manager when I first came in on my first day standing in Celtic Park was to fill the stand. You know, one of the stands was named after the Lisbon Lions, and he was the leader of that. So our respect as players and coaching staff and team was to inspire this team to entertain in order to get the stands back full again as a mark of respect to those great figures of our past. You know, now I still see a number of those guys to this day, and I still pinch myself every day when I bump in and speak to Danny McGrain and Bobby Lennox and Stevie Chalmers and Jim Craig and all these guys that are around the club. And obviously Billy, less frequently now, of course, is at the club, but when we do cross paths, it's, I get a smile for, and I know what the smile means. You know, it's a smile of a support, you know, from a Celtic figure, which provides me with a huge inspiration to do well for him and the Lions and every other player that's played before us.
Football has modernised a lot, Brendan. You think it's important that a club like Celtic to maintain those links with the past, people like Billy, teams like the Lisbon Lions team?
Yeah, I think it's vitally important. I think what is important is that you can't smother yourself with it. And what I mean by that is that for some clubs, it can, you know, the past can be such a massive, take a massive hold of currently and in the future, where it doesn't allow you to move on. I think what's so important is that we remember the great times and the great history of this club and the great players. For me personally, you know, I sit regularly with John Clark here and he'll give me something in 2 or 3 minutes that I won't get out of any coaching course or any book, or, you know, and it's gold dust that you get from them. You know, guys that played at that time when money wasn't the motivator, but guys that will give you great humility, you know, and actually what they achieved, it was monumental back then, but you wouldn't think it. And I think a lot of the modern whether it's coaches, managers, players, can learn a lot from that. You know, that's something that always strikes me when I speak with Danny and speak with John, because those are the guys that I see here regularly, is that real humility that they have whilst being absolute brilliant players and great custodians of the club.
What are the principles that still hold dear from the 60s and 70s in terms of football in modern day?
Yeah, that has always been the Celtic way. The Celtic way has been about entertainment. It's been about fighting for the shirt, defending the culture of your club. So every time you pull on your shirt here at Celtic, you have to play with a confidence. You have to play with an aggression. you have to play with a tenacity, you have to be optimistic that you can win every game, and you got to have an enthusiasm before you even think about tactics. And then when tactics come into it, it's about entertainment, it's about attacking football with a tactical discipline to win. And I think that has been the Celtic way from Jock Steen's days here, and every manager I'm sure that's come into here has tried to uphold the great traditions, and I'm no dissimilar to them. It's, I haven't been a supporter and seen it for a lot of my life. I understand what the requirement is here and what the standard is. So it's my duty here in a dream job to uphold that.
Brendan, let's look at the football, and you said try and win every week. You've nearly been able to do that apart from Inverness.
Mm-hmm.
Given how well you've been doing this season, does that begin to rankle with you now when you look back at that one?
No, I think at the time, of course, you reflect on every game, and of course, like you say, we've won every other game from that point. But no, you, listen, if the players weren't human, I would say we would never lose a game. But unfortunately, they are. They're human, but what they've shown this season already is superhuman efforts, you know, to continue with the focus and concentration and how they played. So for us, of course, we should have won the game. You know, the keeper at the time had an incredible game. We've played Inverness twice since and got two victories. I must say that they've shown up well, Richie and his team, since we last played them when we won 6-0. They've gone away, reflected on that game, and have been really difficult to beat. And have had two very good results away at Hearts, where they drew, and obviously on Friday night, where they had a really good victory. So for us, we recognise it'll be a tough game for us, but the onus is on us, as it always is, to try and break down them and look to attack and get the positive result we want.
You only need a maximum of 13 points now to win the title, and it is still February. Does that again signify what you're saying, and how dominant and how good the team's been this season?
Well, yeah, they have been, but we can never get comfortable. You know, we always have to be pushing. You know, the sign of a really good team and a great team is that you're never satisfied. You have to keep pushing. And that's our idea. My idea, I said in the first day when I came in to the players, even though they'd won the title 5 times previous, our job isn't to defend it. Our job is to win it. And winning means that you play with an aggression and you go and you fight in every single game that you're playing. And that's what they've done, and they've been absolutely first class at that. But we've got to keep it going. We've got 12 games left in the league. Hopefully a few more cup games to go. And I see is that the players still fresh in their mind. They've got that focus in their eye, and you know, we're seeing it in every game that we play.
Failure to win up there, Brendan, is that something you'll make a point of referencing to the players in the build up to this game, or does what you've achieved since then just sort of speak for itself?
No, listen, it's gone. You know, we reflected on it back then when we played the game, and that was a lever for us once we reflected to move on. You know, you can't overanalyze it. It's gone. We've had many great games since then and many big pressure games that we've won since then, so it was just one of those unfortunate things that happens in football. Second half, we were outstanding. Played very, very well, and their keeper's had one of the games of his life. So, okay, accept that. It's not what we want. We wanted 3 points, but we take 1 point, and we move on. And we've done that numerous times this year where we've, from the Champions League, you know, we had a game against Dortmund in the week. You know, we lost 2-0 at home. We weren't so good in the game. They were the better team. But we then played in the weekend and we were absolutely outstanding in a very, very important game. So yeah, it's we just have to keep our focus. We know what we want to achieve, and we just got to keep pushing.
How's James Forrest after the weekend?
Yeah, he's taking a sore one. We're just waiting the results of his scan. Thankfully, he's up and walking about and moving okay. I think it was a really strong challenge. His leg's just on the stretch, coming in from the side, and I don't think there'll be any serious damage, but he's in a wee bit of pain.
Keen to get him back soon, given how well he had been playing the previous couple of games.
Yeah, he's a very important player for us. But I thought Gary McKay-Steven was brilliant when he came in. You know, I think how we set up the team is to it's for the collective, you know. And that's why this year, whenever some players have been out and others have come in, the team has continued to function well. So Gary came in, you know, on the back of James's unfortunate injury, and I thought he'd done very, very well. So if some of the players miss out, like where Jozo Simunovic was due to play, didn't play, I thought Eric Svejchenko came in and played at the real top of his game, very composed, defended very well, and when he had to, him was very good. So that's a huge credit to all the players.
Simunovic back for Wednesday?
Doubtful.
Look at Patrick Robb.
Probably won't be this week. I think he'll join the team training at the end of the week.
Effie Ambrose back in training today. What happened there?
I think it was maybe work permit issues with Effie. So it was unfortunate because I know he's looking forward to going and getting some game time, but unfortunately it didn't work out that way. So he's back here and training.
Has he got a chance of playing again before the end of the season for you?
It's very difficult, Bonnie. I think that Effie's one of the nicest guys you'll ever come across. You know, I've known him in my time in here, and I've never known a player, and not so many of them, that when they're not playing or not even featuring, to knock on my door so many times and tell me how much they're enjoying it, enjoying the training and how he feels he's getting better in training. You don't normally get that nowadays, but he's one of the nicest guys in the world, which is why I always want the best for him, you know, and his family. If it's not going to be here at Celtic, we want to prepare him for his next opportunity, and I think he's pretty realistic knowing that his chances here is limited, but it'll maybe give him a bit of time now to look at something for the summer. But a great guy and one that I would want to help.
You get any players chapping your door saying they're not happy
with their situation? Not at the minute, no. Not to the minute. It's one of the things that the group has. The group has great humility. I think it's something that as a coach, what's very important is when you try to bring together a group of players, my first look is always what they are as people. And what I have here, first and foremost, is a group of real good fellows who are honest, and they show that honesty on the pitch. You know, that's how they are every day. They can accept when they're not so good, because I know that they're giving their very best, you know. And I think that what I've been able to do here with a number of the players is sit them down and listen, this is what you need to improve, this is what you need to be better, and they go out onto the field and they look to improve on what we speak about. Sometimes the problem can be when you have teams is that the player, if you tell them, they think they're the finished article and they think they have talent, even though they might be only 22, 23 years of age. And what they don't recognise is that the best players are always improving. You know, players in their 30s, the top players, in my experience, have all chapped on my door and asked, well, can they be better? The lesser players sometimes don't think they can improve. So when you tell them what they have to improve on, they take umbrage to it, and it dents their pride a wee bit. So they find excuses not to improve. But what I have here is I've got a real honest group of players that work very, very hard every day. The majority of them off the field, they look after their life, their professional life, to ensure that they are the very best for when they play for Celtic.
I guess it makes it easier for the group as a whole if Effie's there with the right attitude for the rest of the season, given he thinks he'll...
Yeah, his attitude is never a problem. It's not a problem. If it was, there would be an issue with it. It'd be very hard to have him back into the group, because the group is so mentally focused and strong, and anything that comes in the way of that, I've got to protect it. But it's not the case with Effie. He's a brilliant professional, like I say. And all my time here, and the guys tell me even before me, I think in the last 5 years or so, the time he's been here, he's never missed one training session. And make sure you write that down, because that doesn't happen a lot in modern football. This is a guy who has not missed one training session. So that's purely out of the love of the game. It's about his enthusiasm for football, and also the way he looks after his life. You know, he's in every day, he smiles, he's first guy to shake your hand. A great, great, great person.
Were there injuries from the weekend?
Nothing more now. I think we're fine.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thanks,
Brendan. Done?
Cheers. Yep.
Thank you very much.
Good. Very good.
Bring me sunshine in your smile. Bring me laughter all the while.
I hope you enjoyed the Chris Davis chat and the subsequent Brendan Rodgers press comments. I thought they were both fascinating and I could have sat and listened to them for hours. There'll be more along from Celtic Underground team soon, with a wee bit celebrating the anniversary on Saturday of Fergus saving a club from the ignominy that we've seen with other teams have suffered. And on that audio, I'll also have a wee bit of an interview with Megan Fallon from the Celtic FC Foundation, which gives a wee bit more information about what the foundation do. It's more than just you give some money to charity. It puts a bit more meat on the bones for you. Anyway, enough of me. Hope you enjoyed the podcast. More along soon. Thanks very much for listening and downloading. If you go on iTunes and give us a rating, that'd be much appreciated. And wherever you pick up your podcast, SoundCloud, Audioboom, YouTube, iTunes, wherever. Thanks very much for taking the time to download and listen. And I will say, this is me, Harry Brady, saying thank you, good night, and God bless. Good night.
Any tears, let your arms be as warm as the sun from up above. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring me love, sweet love. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine.